You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. This month, the SDPB Spotlight illuminates the Black Hills. We've been talking often about the Black Hills National Forest as designated in 1897, but for thousands and thousands of years before that, people lived in the forest and near the forest. It was a place of abundance, food, water, solace, spirit. Craig Howe is founder and director of the Center for American Indian Research and Native Studies. He holds a PhD in architecture and anthropology. There's so much to explore here. In order to march through as much as possible today, we're going to begin the conversation with the first of three U.S. Supreme Court cases that address the people who were here before the U.S. government secured the Louisiana Purchase.
The first one basically said that American Indians have occupancy rights to the land, but they don't really own it. The analog I use is just like a deer or a bear or an elk. You know, they occupy the land, but they cannot alienate it in and of themselves. They can't pass it on, and they have no ownership claim to it. That's essentially what the United States decision in 1823 said. And that if American Indians want to alienate their rights to that land in any way, the only entity they can do that to is the United States of America. So it limited the leverage or the negotiating power of American Indians. They didn't have this way of playing the United States off against other nations in the world as far as bidding for land or with states or with individual Americans, that all that was prohibited. Tribes could only alienate their land to the United States.
All right. Also at this time, there are explorations into this area from, Harney, Lewis and Clark. All kinds of people are coming out and sending word back to Washington about what is exactly there, because it hasn't been mapped from the American government perspective. They find, as we mentioned, timber galore. They find minerals, as in gold. They find resources that they want. And that changes everything, doesn't it?
There's a rush to get those resources. And to a young nation, the United States, these resources are seen as being critical. And those entities such as tribal nations that make less than optimal financial use of those, they think as detrimental or less than Americans are.
Yeah. How do we get to this idea of, a treaty that actually declares this area belongs to these people? Talk to me a little bit about what happens at Fort Laramie, really before the main rush of European American settlers into the area.
And we just have to back up a little bit back to the 1831 and 32 decisions of the Supreme Court. And in the 1832 decision, that's where the decision was made that American Indian tribes have inherent rights. Mm. So these are the rights of these tribes and their citizens prior to the United States. These are inherent rights. They're not given to tribes. And so by 1832, then, U.S. law recognizes that these tribes have these inherent rights prior to the establishment of the United States and not given to them by the United States. So the first treaty, then, that Lakotas, or the Sioux Nation, signed was in 1851, and that was the first Fort Laramie Treaty. And that treaty was basically a treaty of friendship between Plains tribes. And the United States was just trying to get everyone to get along, right? But what they did do was demarcate the territories of these tribes. And so in that 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, the Black Hills are entirely within the lands of the Great Sioux Nation, or Lakotas, as we would say today. 17 years later, there's the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, and those lands are expanded. The lands, and in this case, it's not a treaty of friendship between tribes. It's a treaty of between the United States and the Great Sioux Nation. And the United States essentially is suing for peace. They want the fighting between the United States and the Sioux Nation to end. And so they essentially sue for peace and then agree to all of the terms that the Sioux Nation, mostly represented by Lakotas, demanded. And coincidentally, today, the 18th of August, in 1868, the United States abandoned the third of the three forts that they stipulated they would abandon at the demand of the Great Sioux Nation, and that was Fort Reno. So it's kind of prescient, maybe, that we're talking about this today, but
yeah.
1868 treaty land had three statuses. There was the Great Sioux Reservation, there was the unceded territory, and then there was the hunting territory. Those are three land statuses that are encompassed or contained in that 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. And the Black Hills falls entirely within the Great Sioux Reservation.
Hmm. And then am I right in saying that, I mean, there's still this idea that the United States will settle families to, in quotations, civilize and interact with the tribal people, but they'll respect that boundary, and then they no longer decide to do that. Why are all these people allowed to flood into the Black Hills and start the deforestation and the mineral extraction that we see during the gold rush?
Well, historians come on, you know, at least two major viewpoints. One is that the United States permitted it and looked the other way because it was in violation of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty terms. No non-Indians, the way they phrase it in the treaty is no one who's not a signatory to this treaty, so the Great Sioux Nation. Other than that, no one else is permitted in the Great Sioux Reservation. So any non-Indians who are in the reservation are there in violation of the treaty. There is strong evidence that the United States military did try to enforce the treaty and prevent prospectors and miners from coming into the Black Hills. But after the Custer expedition of 1874, that was it was essentially impossible. They could not do it, and they didn't have the will to do it. So then the United States started different strategies to try to buy the Black Hills from the Great Sioux Nation.
Which was declined, refused, no sale.
Correct. Yes, there was no sale. Some of the negotiators, some of the Great Sioux Nation negotiators did have prices, did float some negotiating prices. One was $10 million if the United States wanted to buy it. Others proposed that the United States would lease the Black Hills for seven generations. And then at that time, the Great Sioux Nation would decide whether or not to sell or not. And that was basically, it seems, from my perspective, seems to be the strongest position that the Lakotas were advocating.
Interesting. So by the end of the year in 1874, after news gets out from journalists who are carrying, you know, the news of the expedition to the cities, including St. Paul, there are 15,000 people, more than 15,000 people rush to this area and occupy it, enter the space to chop down trees, stake gold claims.
Yep.
From what you told me about how this space was seen by the people who lived there, that seems to be, it must have been incredibly disruptive and painful and a time of suffering to sort of see this place used in the way it was being used, very extractive and transactional. What are your thoughts on that? How does that land with you?
Yes, that's true, and that that would have been just disheartening, I think. there were a lot of people in the Black Hills, and they were extracting. But in a way, I wonder if it might be the biggest takeaway and the biggest hurt, maybe, from the Sioux Nation perspective, was there's no trust in the United States. They gave their word, and they wouldn't, and, you know, all the I think the Sioux Nation representatives could think if they wouldn't honor their word, keep their word, the promises that were made in that treaty. And so this distrust gets grounded in strongly, and then the desecration of the place, of the land, is tied in with that. But I think that distrust is what could have been a bigger hurt at that time, mm-hmm. initially, when there was, you know, later when we get the large-scale extraction and deforestation and those type of things, then I think that could take precedent. But initially, it's just this distrust. Mm.
What else needs to be said that people today need to understand about the Black Hills?
One thing is that the status of the land, I think, is still open. That the Supreme Court did make a decision in 1980 that the land was taken from the Great Sioux Nation, and that the quote, I'm paraphrasing it, but it's basically a more ripe and rank case of dishonorable dealings may never be found in our nation's history. So it's an immoral act that was done, but the Congress of the United States has the power to do that. They have what's called plenary power, and they exercise that plenary power to take that land, all of the Black Hills and all of the land between the what's now called the Cheyenne River and the Belle Fourche Rivers. They took all that land in 1877 against the stipulations in the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. So again, this distrust of these solemn agreements between these political nations that says in the United States Constitution, these are the supreme law of the land, these treaties are. So this idea of the status of the land, is still open. And there are still people working to right that wrong. And that's on this political and historical side. And on the ceremonial side, you still have people that have never stopped going into the hills and into the Black Hills National Forest to perform ceremonies and to gather plants and other resources that are important in maintaining and perpetuating Lakota culture.
What would that look like in the future? What is the way to right the immoral act? Because I remember interviewing Nick Estes, and he said, you know, it's not, and again, I'm paraphrasing him, but he pointed out it's like stealing somebody's car and then driving by their house every day saying, hey, I still have your car. You know, it's not something that just happened in the past. It's something that is continually happening day by day. What corrects the immoral wrong? How does that proceed?
Well, to pick up on that idea of a stolen car, you know, if someone steals your car, when it is recovered, or then it comes back to you, the thief doesn't get to keep it. And so I think, again, the analog there is this land was stolen or taken. And in U.S. law, that should be return to its owners. Now, because the status of American Indians and Indian tribes, then this whole different legislation comes in, you know, where the United States, by the Indian Claims Commission, they said we can right these wrongs with money, but we will not return land. So there's those obstacles that have to become that we need to overcome, and they have been overcome. Ever since President Nixon, he was the first president to return land to American Indian tribes, and that was at Taos Blue Lake. So there is a precedent for returning land. The other thing is in the short term, tying back to what those representatives back in the 1860s were talking about was this idea of leasing the land. So that the amazing thing is the United States still has not paid a penny, not one penny for the Black Hills. This is just a shocking fact. Not one penny has been paid by the United States for the Black Hills for 153 years now. Hmm. Or the taking of them in 1877, so it'd be a little less than that. But this idea of this decision that was made in 1980, maybe if we could reimagine that decision, not as a payment for the Black Hills, a purchase for the Black Hills, but as a lease or rent of the Black Hills, it might make it palatable to tribes and tribal communities to accept some of that money on that basis, not as purchase, but as rent.
That's Craig Howe, founder and director of the Center for American Indian Research and Native Studies.